Welcome to The Catbird Speaks, the podcast for BP Southside, the local blog for Baseball Prospectus. Joining you today, rarely from Chicago, is your editor, me, James Fegan, along with my cat, Simba, which I did not name. And joining me is Ethan Spaulding, who is also in the Chicago area for a rare occasion.
Yeah.
Stop hitting the mic with your tail, damn it.
Yeah, I'm in wonderful Glenview, taking care of the house with my little brothers because my parents are out of town. And, well, they're helping my other brother move in, so I'm running things around here for the day.
It's exciting stuff. If you want to hear more exciting stuff like this, you should subscribe to this podcast, our Blog Talk Radio site, search for The Catbird Speaks, or on iTunes, just search for it, and you can subscribe. That's probably the easiest way. I don't know why no one's threatened the iTunes monopoly on podcast subscriptions in a meaningful way, but for me, they just haven't, but I'm 29 and extremely basic, so there might be a better way. It's September 10th in a White Sox season, which means it's the dog days, on schedule as usual. The White Sox are 78-82 as of, like, winning last night, or Saturday,
no,
Friday night?
You added 10 wins to both of those.
They're 68-72.
There's not only, if there were 78-82, there'd be two games left in the season.
Right, that would be better. it's 68-72. I guess that would mean that they have a outside chance at finishing at 500. Which would probably be good for Rick Hahn to say that not all four seasons of he's been in control have been losing seasons, but probably isn't that meaningful as far as their goals preseason and what anyone cares about as far as like how close they are to being a contender.
I was looking at the schedule actually because I was like, maybe they could finish 500. They don't play the AL Central well, and they are basically exclusively playing the AL Central between now and the end of the year. They have a three-game – I think they have a series against the Phillies. It might only be a two-game series.
Two games on the road.
Yeah, and then they have a series against Tampa.
That'll help.
Yeah, Tampa's really bad. And then it's Royals for the rest of the week, Indians, Royals – Phillies, Indians. So there's just a lot of in-division play. And if they keep playing like they usually do in division, they're probably not going to catch 500.
Imagine if they're in the race and they are looking at that freaking seven-game home closer against Tampa and Minnesota.
Yeah. Imagine if they had just done what the Yankees did after the trade deadline.
Well,
because I'm pretty sure they were like right around where the Yankees were when the Yankees sold at the deadline. Maybe a little bit further out.
What the Yankees are doing is not entirely usual.
No, they're a game out of a playoff spot right now. Granted, there's four teams for two spots in those that they're fighting with, and Houston just won today.
And their seven-game winning streak only got them within a game of a playoff spot, and they're bound to, you know, fall back to earth.
Yeah, but Baltimore is so bad at pitching that they acquired Kyle Lobstein to pitch meaningful innings in a playoff race.
That's possibly even worse than acquiring Wade Miley to do that, which is something they've already done this season.
Yeah, and that's the same team that let Miguel Gonzalez go for free, and for what he's been, Miguel Gonzalez would probably be their second best pitcher.
Yeah.
I mean, Bundy's been okay, and Gossman's been good, so third best probably, but
Bundy's had flashes of looking awesome, but
he's had flashes of looking real useless, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that happens when you're still Carlos Rodon's age. He's somehow still that young, because he's been around, even though he was in the majors, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah. Or 2012.
Yeah, so 4 years. What does that mean for his service time? He probably wasn't accruing major league service time. Well, when he was on the DL?
He still has rookie status.
Well, rookie status and service time aren't the same thing, though.
I just think it's funny, though.
Yeah, that's really funny. Let's see.
But the point I was trying to make is that watching the White Sox every day, whether or not they win is not really a big concern or
no.
even point of interest. At this point, we're kind of tuning in to see, like, what the state of their core is. And, like, I mean, another big thing is kind of the awards chase with, like, Chris Sale. Quintana's really kind of achieved pitching himself out of it the last two games since he needed to, like, make an extreme statistical case. And once he kind of seeded the ERA
lead. Yeah. And, like, Sale, like, there's the whole thing, like, oh, he's probably the best pitcher on his team when Chris Sale's on his team. And then Sale just decided he's never going to throw less than 8 innings and give up more than 2 or sometimes 3 runs. So kind of got rid of that argument.
Yeah, and just now his ERA is back over 3. It just looks like a really, really good Jose Quintana season.
Yeah, which isn't supposed to be a Cy Young winner. I mean, it's his best season of his career. He's probably a top 5 pitcher in the AL, but I wouldn't vote for him. I don't think he's been the best pitcher in the AL this year.
Is it weird, even if, like, statistically you look at his, like, the top of the AL starters, that he's a top 5 pitcher, to still think of him as kind of being a number 2?
Well,
like, he just doesn't have, like, the ace type of, like, stuff. And
no, yeah, I mean, what's John Lester?
I would call him a number 2.
Yeah. So, like, he's really, really similar to John Lester, who I'd start in game 1 for the best team in baseball in the playoffs right now, Lester, over Arrieta or Hendricks. So, it's kind of like a feel thing with both those guys. They get you because they're just really good and smart and have great control and stuff like that. But they don't feel like aces in the same way where Chris Sale's like, oh, shit, I have the bases loaded against Victor Martinez, who's killed me my whole career. Let me start breaking out a 7 slider that I haven't used to this point of this game, which is what he's been fascinating to watch because of the weird stuff he's been doing recently.
Also, there's a difference between what you're saying with I'd start him with the best team in baseball and, oh, shit, if we run into this guy... in, like, the wild card game, our fucking season is over. This is bullshit. Right.
And Sale's a guy who's like, oh, shit, we ran into this guy, and our season's over. Actually, Sale might be one of maybe 2 or 3 guys. Sale might be the only guy in the AL who I'd actually feel that way about right now. Maybe Verlander. Like, I don't feel like he's the only guy who has that real, like, he will, like, even though he's never pitched a big game, I don't get that same feeling with guys, and this is totally a feel thing, it's totally a subjective thing, even with guys like Kluber, who's awesome, with Price, who's awesome, I don't get that same feel.
Yeah. The sense that you kind of gotten screwed over by this matchup.
Right, exactly.
Like, this, like, isn't necessarily fair.
Right, and I mean, it's kind of with how they pitch, because, like, Price and Verlander beat you in very different ways than Sale beats you. Sale beats you just by crushing when he's on. Speaking of crushing, do we want to talk about Carlos Rodon yesterday?
Sure. I mean, he's one of the reasons you would watch, trying to figure out whether Carlos Rodon is, like, you know, a super above-average core starter next season. And pretty much all the second half, the answer to that has been yes.
Yeah. And I mean, it's obvious the whole package hasn't come together yet. And part of that is, like, I mean, if this isn't the whole package, well, if what he's doing right now isn't the whole package, that's super exciting. But, like, yesterday, the dude looks kind of off first couple innings, isn't helped by his defense, gets up to 45 pitches through 2, so it looks like it's going to be a 4 or 5 inning start. And then by the end of the game, he is on pitch 115 and 116 in the sixth inning with the bases loaded and hits 99 miles an hour on 115 and then 93 miles an hour on a disgusting slider to get Paulo Orlando swinging.
Yeah, that was overwhelming stuff. I mean, it could be just like Paulo Orlando is like a reserve dude, but I always notice where like the batter in a like a total like game-changing strikeout where it's like he's mad at himself and where it's a good look of just like utter resignation of, well, that happened to me.
And yeah, and I mean like
definitely the latter.
That slider wasn't like a pitch that even someone who's not Paulo Orlando is gonna hit. It looks like when like Wade Davis breaks out his cutter thing that goes 95 and dives, except from the left side. It was just a disgusting pitch. And it's fascinating to me that Rodon can break that out on pitch 116 because he's not like his velo profile like shows itself off is really interesting to me because he's not like you don't think even when he was drafted, he was kind of like a guy like, oh, he throws kind of hard, but he wasn't like his velocity dipped with the year he was drafted, which people were worried about. But I wasn't thinking he's going to come in and have 97, 98, 99 up his sleeve. And he's been doing that, especially late in games when he's been pitching recently.
Yeah, he doesn't quite sit there the way like a Syndergaard would. I mean, no one right. does, but it's something that it's not. It's, we don't even think of Rodon as someone who's like leveling up or ratcheting up over the course of a game the way Verlander and the way Sale has started to do. But it's something he just seems to have, just because he's like he's that strong or he's that powerful, which is a nice little tool to have in the bag.
Yeah, and he, I was looking through his Brooks player card earlier today, and he, and I don't think I've ever seen a pitcher with that like. Looks like this. He his first time through the order on his fastball, he averages 93.67. Second time through the order, he averages 94. And third time through the order and beyond, he averages 94.64. So
that seems unusual.
I wanted to actually dig deeper because I can't think, like, that's not normal. Like, that's peak Verlander stuff, and that's not just his fastball. His slider gains almost or more than a full mile per hour from the first to the third times of the order, and it's just like linearly getting faster. And that seems just kind of bizarre, even like because he's not like a Sale who's going to be out there in the seventh, eighth inning, and he really needs that stuff like to ramp up because he needs to become a different pitcher. He like. It's weird to see a 23-year-old who sometimes struggles getting through 5-6 innings, like, have that stuff, like, waiting in the bag.
Yeah, for someone who still averages under 6 innings per start this season, you'd think that his issue is, like, kind of endurance and consistency and, like, keeping things at the high level he flashes in the early innings. And to some degree it is, in terms of, like, hitting spots. But, yeah, it's really encouraging stuff. Especially with his changeup, which has really become a second half focus and kind of leads itself to theorizing whether that's his new battery mate or whether or not that was just something they were trying to emphasize in the long run the whole time.
I was watching his post-game comments earlier this morning after watching a little bit of his start again, and he... he's mentioned in like the last 30 seconds of the interview, or even less than that. He mentioned Narvaez three times. Like, he really appreciated the way Narvaez called the game and where he used the changeup and stuff like that, which I have a very hard time not immediately reading into that being like not necessarily a direct shot at Diner Navarro. But definitely, like, he thinks it's a marked improvement over Navarro's pitch calling. And like it's been really fascinating to watch because, again, like Rodon's not a guy I would think of as someone who would pitch backwards. He seems like a guy with his stuff who would go fastball, like fastball, get ahead with the fastball, and then use a slider or a change to get someone out. Like, but he's been pitching backwards. He's been using his change to get ahead at times, like almost like Sale does. And that seems like that seems like really, really interesting for a guy like Rodon.
New phone. Who is this?
Hey, it's me.
How you doing, Rubio?
I'm doing really well. I'm glad you're able to set these calls up like 3 minutes ahead of time. Oh, it's James and Ethan. They called me to do a podcast.
Mal, we're talking to Carlos Rodon right now, and how
are you driving? Like,
I think I sent this to you earlier today, but Rodon. Not only is Rodon holding his velo late in the season, which is encouraging for a 23-year-old pitcher, but he's also holding his velo through starts. His fastball, the third time through the order, his fastball is a mile per hour faster than it is the first time he faces batters through the order. And the same goes with his changeup, his slider, and his sinker.
Yeah, I mean, when you're holding velocity that late into the game, you know, I think some of it has to do with the fact that he's not throwing the two-seam fastball as much. Some of it has to do with the fact that he's really improved his strength and looks to be improving his physical conditioning because he's, you know, maintaining his mechanics deeper into starts and kind of finishing harder.
Speaking of his physical conditioning, he also, like, at times last year looked like a guy who you could see as he gets older, he looks like he's going to put on bad weight just because he's got that body type. Mm-hmm. And he's looked like he's gone in the opposite direction this year. Like, he looks pretty cut right now, and he didn't look cut last year. There were times last year where he looked a little chunky.
Yeah.
Especially the pajama uniform day. He looked fat that day.
Well, but he did. If you're going to wear that.
Yeah. He looked very soft, but he's actually, you know, he's really maintaining his mechanics and repeating everything well. You kind of look at his torque and his drive lines, and everything's kind of staying online. So when you're maintaining velocity like that, it really helps improve your changeup quite a bit because it adds to the separation factor between your fastball and your changeup. Makes it harder to pick up the baseball like that. And, you know, the slider's always been there. So, you know, it's you know, he's effectively using three pitches, but he's using them, you know, so much better that it's really improved his repertoire.
Is there a reason to watch the White Sox beyond Carlos Rodon?
No, that's about it. That's all I really wanted to talk about, too. So,
hey, we can watch Sale pitch like a fucking maniac in a weird, really weird way and do things that seem like he's, like, using baseball as his sandbox.
Yeah, he's kind of playing around with teams right now. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, like, he'll sit 91, 92 the first couple innings, look like he doesn't have a feel for a slider and changeup or anything. And then he'll strike out eight guys out of his last 10 outs or something like he did against Seattle a couple of weekends ago.
Yeah, man, he's fun. But I mean, there's not a hell of a lot. You're just kind of looking at Tim Anderson, seeing how he's developed quite a bit. That's about it. They're not calling up Birdie. Fulmer's going to stay down on the farm. So there's not really a hell of a lot of reason. You're just watching Rodon and Sale and kind of hoping Quintana can get stuff back on the tracks, and that's about all you can really think of.
If this was like any other organization, would we be looking at like Carson Fulmer and be like, let's get that guy some major league starts right away?
Yeah.
I feel like he's really there yet.
He's not there. He probably needs another year down there. They stopped, his mechanics changed mid-season. So, you know, when he popped up in the Futures game, he was going back to a little bit of the more higher maintenance mechanics and
the reliever mechanics.
Yeah. Reliever mechanics. And, you know, so that's going to play some funk with his development time and kind of where his arc is. And most of the other guys are pretty far away. I actually thought there was going to be a pretty good chance you could see Birdie up here. But I guess that's not going to go down. So, you know, with minor league season done, you can't really look into the Alan Hansen box scores anymore. I don't know. I don't know what the hook is here. I mean, I'm going to go see Chance. That's the next time I'm going to the Cellular. So.
Oh, you know. Same. So.
I'll see you there.
Yeah.
James, are you going?
No.
Are you gonna? No. Are you sure?
I'm not entirely sure, but it's looking unlikely right now.
You could you could break Kat and me up so there's an extra ticket.
That could be worth it.
I could. I know a few people would be happy about that. So.
Yeah, like all of our Twitter followers.
Oh my god.
All right, that's all I got. I gotta go to Harold's.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
How far is the Harold's from you?
It's not that far.
It's 5:15. Are you 60?
Yeah. I said, have me on real quick, man. I gotta go.
I thought you meant like you'd be here really quickly.
No.
Which you were.
Yeah, I was. Now I gotta go. Does this mess up your plan?
Not no, really. We didn't really have a plan in the first place.
This is kind of an exciting, like, guess verse.
It's like when Andre pops on the Frank album.
Yeah, this is just a feature. This isn't a, you know, full thing. I'm just featuring.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, thanks for having me on.
All right.
Oh, wait. Can we ask one more question?
Sure.
Go for it.
What do you expect? Since the last time we talked, the Sox AFL rosters have been announced. What do you expect to see from someone like Zach Collins in the AFL?
Shit ton of raw, you know, really fun batting practices. I would anticipate he's going to be a little bit tired. He's basically been playing since February, so you know, when I'm going to the AFL, I'm not going to be writing up a straight report. I'm just going to be looking at like the tools and all that stuff. But I mean, basically, good approach with a ton of power. And, you know, I'll see what else is up there. I don't think I'm going to see a hell of a lot on defense from what I've heard. And kind of given where in the season he's going to be, I can't really see it looking very pretty back there.
I remember Semien having, like, a god-awful AFL that they, like, just because he had a never-ending year at that point.
Yes, it's a long year for minor league kids. And it's a really long year for kids who were just drafted because they've been playing competitive baseball, especially in Florida, since basically February. So you kind of have to take some of that stuff with a grain of salt.
And I mean, that swing seemed like the kind of swing that would wear down a body after a while. I mean, I know he's still actually my age, so he's still 21. So his body's still fresh, but. But.
Is that how that works?
It starts going downhill after that very soon for you, Ethan. So,
oh, for my physical condition, it already has. The being able to legally buy beer thing is a problem for my calories.
Yeah, you got to kind of figure out where you want to fit on that. That should probably be something we save for the other podcast. So.
For sure. Except if it is relevant to Zach Collins or Carlos Rodon.
It is very.
That's what I was worried about with Rodon, but he seems to have gone in the right direction on that way.
Yeah, he seems all right. He seems all right. All right, I do got to go.
All right, really enjoy your Harold's.
All right, thanks, guys. Bye.
All right, that was a fun guest feature. I guess with Sale, right, we were talking on Sale, and we kind of got a little bit derailed, but I do wonder, and I meant to actually ask Mal this, but I do wonder how much of Sale's, like, late season, like, he's got a ton left, is that his approach was designed to be there for a stretch run and for the playoffs.
I'm fascinated by it, because we thought this was, like, a total, like, cock-up, like, by the end of the first half when he's getting slammed by the Braves. And this is, like, his first second half season ever. Like, not, like, obviously, he set, like, a really high standard in the second half, or in the first half of his years. It's not like he's never had a good second half, but, like,
he's never had a second half better than his first half, and then this year has been better.
Right.
He's also, the reason why he's my Cy Young right now is that he is basically going to end up leading the American League in starts, despite the other leaders having two more starts than him.
See me in innings?
But, yeah, innings. The other leaders will have two more starts, and he'll have more innings than anyone else. He is the only pitcher in baseball other than actually after yesterday, it's probably not true of Kershaw anymore. And because of how his season is going to end, it's probably not going to be true of Kershaw. But Sale is the only pitcher in baseball averaging 7 innings pitched per start this year among qualified starters. So I imagine that he intentionally left a lot in the tank this year, so he didn't have a second half where he falls off like he has in the past. And I think that's definitely going to help him with the Cy Young case down the stretch. But I think this is definitely something that was intentional in case they needed him in a wild card game or something.
Which is just the saddest.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can't start those plans, you know, knowing what it's going to be. The best second half I found for him was, unsurprisingly, 2014, which is probably his career peak. He struck out 106 in 79 innings and had a 2.28 ERA. But that was higher than his 2.08 first half ERA. So it was a step down.
Yeah. And I mean, I imagine the part of the reason why that second half was better is because he had much fewer innings on his arm that year.
Right.
Whereas last year, he's getting to the second half after that monster end of the first half where he was just striking out everyone and he kind of hit a wall.
Right.
And I think that happened in 2012, which was to be expected in his first year as a starter. And it got them in a bit of trouble because they didn't have their rock in their rotation anymore. And when their offense fizzled out and they didn't have their ace pitching like an ace, just a solid pitcher.
Yeah, the 2012 thing was very real. It wasn't just like a performance. Like, it was noticeable miles off his fastball.
He looked like shit.
Stretch.
Like, that's part of why what Rodon's doing this year is interesting to me, because Sale was really tired by the end of his first full year in the rotation. And obviously Rodon's not got nearly as many innings as Sale did because Rodon had that DL stint. But Rodon is looking stronger right now than he was at any point. And in his 23 season. And Sale in his first full year really looked deteriorated. I remember going to a game where he started against the Rays.
Yeah,
and
I was at that game. That was sad as hell.
Like 6 runs, right?
Yeah, he left after like 3 innings or something pathetic.
Yeah, he had absolutely nothing. He was holding like 91.
I mean, to be fair, Rodon never had like, I don't know if the innings to inning comparison would hold up, but he wasn't being used like an ace in a playoff race the way that Sale was in his first year start. Like, I don't think he was pitching through like the high stress situations that Sale was being left in.
Right. I mean, I think yesterday the reason why Robin left him in with the bases loaded at 115 pitches or whatever he was at when that at bat start was because it's like it's kind of to simulate that kind of situation.
Right. And Rodon was thrilled about that after the game.
Yeah. I mean, I saw some people on Twitter like, oh, go to Nate Jones. And like, if it was a game that mattered, that'd probably be the right decision. But as much as I'm critical of Robin's game usage, I thought that was a very smart decision because you want to know what Rodon does in that kind of situation.
Also, for the love of God, take it easy on Nate Jones.
Right, that too. Yeah, especially Nate Jones. Like, using David Robertson a ton is one thing. Nate Jones was, like, destroyed because he was used too much, and he has a really funky delivery, and he throws the ball really hard.
He's also really, really good, and it'd be a shame if, I don't know, like, it hasn't been a lot, but, like, the fact that, like, people have talked to me about how many, like, saves Nate Jones has blown, like, which, first of all, is kind of a junk stat once you take it out of the closer context in the first place.
Right.
But, like, he's left in for every, like, there's no high-leverage relief situation that's not the ninth that hasn't involved Nate Jones.
Right.
Or hardly any. So, like, yeah, he's blown games because, like, if he gives up a run at all for, like, all these like tie or one run ball games he's constantly coming to, yeah, he blows the game, but he's a really, really good like setup guy. Like, he's a really good eighth inning guy.
Yeah, like other than like for the most part, other than your relievers that are kind of like mop-up guys, he is really close to the top in the AL in innings pitched with 65.2. A lot of the guys ahead of him are guys, I mean, Dellin Betances, who's just incredible, but like guys like Ryan Dull or guys that you kind of can give a few more innings because they're converted starters. Like Jones is just a guy you use. He's a fireman, and you're using him in a lot of innings at this point because the bullpen is terrible outside of him. And I mean, Robertson's not having an awful year. He's just not having a David Robertson year. And then you have Matt Albers and Michael Yanoa.
I don't know what's going on with Albers and Yanoa. I don't really understand the usage of any of them. I think I'd be using Yanoa like they're using Albers, and I'd be using Albers. Well, I probably would have waived Albers, but, you know, I would have reversed them.
Yeah, I imagine that Albers is kind of being burned because there's, like, they don't have any future for him. Like, he's really bad. And it's not like they need anything from him in the future. It's not like that putting him in a bunch of high leverage spots is, or it's not like using him a bunch. I felt like they're actually using him more than they have. He's only appeared in 55 games, but a righty who's only appeared in 55 games and has 47 innings is not good. He should usually be able to get more innings and appearances if you're a righty. But,
you know, yeah. It just doesn't seem much curiosity to find out what he is, and that very well could be well-founded. Like, he might not be very good. His walk rate is insane. But I'm just wondering why there's not curiosity. Like, he had, like, 4 appearances in all of July. He had a great appearance in Minnesota and, like, got 5 outs, or, sorry, 7 outs without allowing, like, a hit and struck out 4. And he hasn't pitched in a week since then.
Yeah. There seems like there's something there to me. Like, I don't know if it's a lot there. I'm not saying I want him as their 7th inning guy next year. But he's a guy you could carry in your bullpen and you could do worse. And the stuff is there that maybe he... Like, relievers sometimes... He's a guy that if you're building a bullpen from scratch, or if you're building most of a bullpen from scratch, which is kind of what they're going to have to do, he's a guy you might turn to early in the year and see if something clicks. Kind of like what did with Hector Neris, for example, or Ryan Bearclaw with the Phillies and Marlins. Like, guys that just, like, they have stuff and then suddenly it clicks and then you have a pretty solid reliever.
Yeah, like, I'm more curious about him than I am within, like, Chris Beck. But I feel like that's not, they're prioritized.
Sometimes when I see Chris Beck pitch, I'm like, why isn't he better? The slider's kind of good.
He sits 95 out of the pen.
Yeah, like, there's a little bit of curiosity there for me, too. But he just, like, nothing pops. Like, the slider's okay. The fastball's okay. But nothing is, like... nothing is, like, impressive with him. But sometimes it looks cool. But he also has really bad command.
Nothing... Everything that looks like it might be cool doesn't get the kind of response from hitters like it's overwhelming them or challenging them the way you would think.
Kind of like how Petrichko works, is if not even that. But it kind of does feel like Petrichko to me in the sense that, like, you look at it, you're like, oh, this might work, and then it doesn't work.
Yeah, like, Petrichko, you see, he's a huge, like, I think 6'4 guy who throws, like, 93, 95 with a ton of sink. You think that guy should have a career, and then
maybe. Yeah. And I mean, Petrichko and Putnam, like, if you can get those guys fully back healthy, that looks nice in your pen, because those are still guys that might have a really nice year. Throw Birdie in there. Jennings has gone from, like, halfway through the season having a really low ERA and, like, a strikeout rate equal to his walk rate to, like, I feel like, I mean, yesterday he looked incredible. He struck out three batters and five batters faced and was perfect.
He's had some really weird moments this season.
Yeah. I mean, he's looked more like the guy you wanted him to be probably since they traded Zach Duke.
I mean, I guess that's what they wanted. I didn't have any anticipation that he'd be that guy.
I'm just... Since July 25th, which I think is the date they traded Duke, he's been really good, but I guess it's only been 13 innings pitched. For some reason, I feel like he'd been in many more games, but I guess Robin uses him in a lot of one-inning situations.
A lot.
Yeah. He has appeared in, let's see, a lot of games. I don't know how to, on Fangraphs.
You said July 5th, 25th? I have like 19 appearances for him since then.
Yeah, including the 25th, he has 20 games appeared in. And only 14 innings. 13 innings. But I think there's a... He's an okay lefty reliever to have in your pen. I think...
He's weird because he doesn't have the traditional splits, and I feel like Robin's going to keep using him like that.
Well, hopefully we don't have to deal with that anymore. Because Robin hopefully won't be on the team anymore, or with the team anymore. Versus lefties, he has allowed a 294 weighted on base average and 298 versus righties, so no real split this year. In his career, it's 314 versus lefties and 300 versus righties, so bad in both regards, or not good at least.
I mean, that's WOBA?
Yeah.
That's not terrible.
Yeah, I was thinking true average for a second.
Because, yeah, that'd be bad.
That would be really bad. That'd be James Shields bad.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing with him. Why are you going to start him?
Oh, are we talking about Shields now?
Yeah, I was just using it as a segue. Like, he's already looks like something's broken, and then you, like, he says his back hurts, and now, like, we're going to, like, play through it? Why?
Yeah.
What purpose is this serving? Like, if there was really, like, some talk about adjustments or, like, something they picked up. But, like, it's been months and he's just getting hammered over and over again. Like, what? Like, at this point, just shut him down and try to get him healthy, I would think.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it is, like, you don't have an alternative of who to start in his place. But who could be worse?
when he goes out there, you're not even sure he's going to get through two. And if he doesn't get through two, what do? You have to destroy your bullpen just to have him. Like, you'd be better off starting, like, some, like, fucking Chris Volstad, who I keep forgetting is in the White Sox system.
I'd rather see Beck.
Yeah. But I agree. Like, I don't see what's there at all right now. Like, maybe, basically with him is, I know a lot of people say get him off the team, but...
I get why he has to stay on the team, because, like, you got the contract, and, you know, it's not ridiculous that he'd have some sort of dead cat bounce or just recovery or be healthy again or something.
Like, he's a guy who's known in the past to be able to make do with less than the best stuff. I mean, he, for much of his career, got away with throwing, like, 40% changeups as a right-handed pitcher because he knew he was a smart pitcher. He's a smart pitcher, but... He hasn't made that adjustment in season. I don't know if he's capable of making that adjustment after season. The changeup does not look the same as it used to. It looks flat. The fastball, all the off-speed stuff is mush, and the fastball is nothing to write home about.
Like, something's extremely wrong, and has been wrong for months. What are we accomplishing here? Like, is it just, like, he... has so much pride about, like, never missing a start that they're worried about, like, upsetting him? And, you know, surely even he would recognize, like, you are at the point where, like, this is a merit-based, like, shutting down?
Yeah.
Like, surely he has to realize that he's at a crisis in his career where this could be done if he can't find some fix. I don't know why, like, it'd be unheard of. I don't get it.
Just to take a break and hope it works next year. And maybe it does. Like, I'm not totally ruling it out for next year. Like,
yeah, I'm all about you got to bring him to camp and, you know, work through some things and, you know, figure out if he's healthy again and fresh or...
Yeah. As am I. But, like... I'd rather, like, for this season, I'd rather throw out, like, Jordan Guerrero or something like that to finish the year. Like, I don't even, like, I just don't see the point of him on the roster anymore. Like, he's going to pitch tonight, this podcast that presumably will go, there's probably no editing you have to do for once.
Yeah.
So, amazing. You could probably throw this up right before the game starts, but I don't think anyone's going to listen. I guess why would you even watch a Sox game at this point? But Shields is starting. But,
I didn't go. My friend Brandon wanted me to go. And I was like, if we're going to go to a game, let's go tomorrow. He's like, I can't do it tomorrow. I was like, we'll pick another weekend. I'm not paying to go see Shields.
Yeah. I was strongly considering going tomorrow, but the logistics of it and having to get back to Madison by Monday morning at 8:40 is unideal. So, yeah, but hopefully tomorrow's fun. But just, like, watching Shields, it's like watching Danks in last year. But even Danks, like, I think you mentioned this, that even Danks, like, would sometimes make something happen out of nothing. Like, he was smart enough that sometimes he would work with smoke and mirrors and get something to work. Even when Shields has gotten good results, it hasn't felt like it felt with Danks, where he was, like, kind of just making shit happen.
Danks is like watching some guy who broke his leg drag himself across the finish line with his arms. Shields is like watching some guy who broke his leg, like, constantly trying to get up and walk on it over and over.
That's a pretty good analogy. He's got nothing left and he's throwing like he doesn't know, he's not, like, he has no way of adapting. I mean, that's fine. Like, I don't, like, I'm not saying he has to come up with a new approach. Maybe he can't. Maybe he is unable to come up with a new approach. Maybe in season especially. But there's just, because of that, there's nothing to watch. Because he's so bad.
Yeah, like, we're not learning anything. Like,
yeah.
Even, like, an overmatched minor, like, there's a chance to develop, there's a chance to learn, to see what, like, plays up at the major league level. Like, what are we finding out from these?
Yeah. I mean, I guess part of it is that there's not really pitching. I mean, other than, like, Jordan Guerrero... There's not really pitching in the minors that you really want to see without, like, being worried, like, well, maybe we should just shut them down.
Yeah, the Charlotte Knights are not a good team.
No. No, they have nothing. They really don't have anything. Their rotation, their leading game start for the Charlotte Knights, with 27, the most was Chris Volstead. Next most was Jacob Turner. Then Anthony Renato, then Terrence Marin, Cameron Lowe, Scott Carroll, David Holmberg, Eric Johnson, Chris Beck, and then you get into Miguel Gonzalez before he was called up.
Well, like, Holmberg has some major league starts.
Yeah, he was the guy that made me think, oh, why the hell are you trading Daniel Hudson for Edwin Jackson when you're also giving up a maybe prospect in Daniel Holmberg? But he was more just like, he's really young and has some performance, and he was really bad. And then Daniel Hudson was really good and then, like, had three Tommy John surgeries.
Was it three or two?
It's two. He's not Jared Parker.
Ugh, poor guy.
Both of them. Sam wrote an incredible article about... Daniel Hudson, like, just like, and I can't do it justice because he's too good of a writer, but it was basically about his poor performance as a reliever this year and, like, what it even means to come back and, like, what it means to get a chance that I recommend reading. But it was just, it's just, like, his whole thing is sad. He he was so good after they traded him to the Diamondbacks. Yeah. Like, holy shit, this looks like a really bad trade. In 11 starts, he had a 1.69 ERA. And the next year, he has a 220-inning pitch season where he has a 3.5 ERA and a 3.28 FIP.
Including a head-to-head matchup with the Sox where he totally kicked their shit in.
Yeah.
Against Edwin. Like,
was it against Edwin?
Yeah. It was not a good moment.
Yeah, and then he is terrible the next year, blows out his elbow, and has kind of been a mess since. He had a little bit of success in the bullpen last year, and this year not so much. And, yeah, that's a sad story. I also wonder if he's one of the guys you might take a flyer on, in if you want a if you want to rebuild a bullpen.
If you read the arm, he's also there's also the part where he turns down like the pre-arb extension.
Yeah, I didn't read it. I need to read it. I actually just started reading The Only Rule It Has to Work, and that's fantastic. And I'm not getting paid to say that because BP doesn't pay me. Well, I guess you do, but not BP Maine.
I mean, it's not out of my pocket, man.
Well, sure. But no one paid me to say The Only Rule That Has to Work is really good. It's just really, really
It's a good book.
Have you read it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't make enough time to read. I spend too much time reading Twitter, and Twitter's bad.
I don't either, but I'm not... I don't know if I should tell listeners what my workaround is, because it's embarrassing. I listen to books on tape.
Oh. See, I can't do that. I could not do that because my ADD is way too bad. And if I read really fast and sometimes I'll miss stuff and then I have to go back and read it. But you can't do that with books on tape.
Well, you have to drive to Wisconsin pretty often. I mean, what do you do on long drives?
I read. Because I take the bus.
Oh, well, that's about to say, like, I can't do that by hand in the car.
Right. No, I've literally never driven up to Wisconsin. I've been driven by my parents, or I've been driven by a bus driver.
Huh.
I drove home from Wisconsin once.
Yeah. I've done the Indiana Toll Road more times than I want to count.
Yeah. I kind of am avoiding having to pay for both a car and parking as long as I possibly can.
So we wanted to talk about Jose Abreu since...
Oh, yeah.
Jose Abreu.
Yeah. He's looked like... It's such an obvious difference, not even just by the stat line, but how he's looked. Like, he's barreling up balls that for the beginning of the year he just wasn't. Like his approach was so power devoid early in the year, and now it's not. Like now he's hitting massive home runs. He had the longest home run in the Statcast era, so only in a couple of years at Target Field.
Yeah.
Like he has mammoth power again, and it's hard to explain. I mean, the Sparks thing and the Sun thing are definitely part of it.
I mean, that's part of it. I mean, definitely the hand adjustment is good. Definitely, like, you know, improving his personal situation is good. I wonder how much of it is just, you know, Jose Abreu is extremely talented hitter and is going to figure it out eventually.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. Like, someone who knew none of the context and, you know, was just a complete, you know, box score, Fangraphs table sorter could just be like, oh, he'll regress and wouldn't look wrong right now.
Speaking of regression, a conversation we had in the Slack today was about Todd Frazier, about him having a really weird season.
Yeah.
Not even a bad one.
Not great.
It's not great, but a league average offense, third baseman, and I know the defensive metrics aren't big on his defense, but I think he's fine defensively there.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's the best third baseman. It's the best full season third baseman they've had since what, 06?
Yeah, healthy Creedy, probably. There is always a factor of whether or not White Sox trauma has affected us. Like, if like every major league third baseman should look as good as Todd Frazier defensively, and the fact that like the White Sox even tried Connor Gillespie as a regular third baseman was just absurd.
For sure. But, I mean, Frazier was known as a good third baseman before he came here.
Right. Also, like end stage, like, Kevin Youkilis didn't even look that bad to me.
Right.
And he was, like, done next year as a major leaguer.
Yeah. Got a lot of money from the Yankees, though. And was very done.
Yeah. That was funny.
Yeah. I mean, but what's so weird about the year is a lot of times you'd see someone with a 220 BABIP and be like, you know, he's probably going to regress and he's probably getting unlucky. But he has a 20% infield fly ball rate, which is obscene. Like, most players that have that rate, you'd think, like, are basically screwed.
Yeah.
He also has 35 home runs. A 20% infield fly ball rate when he has a 48% fly ball rate means about 40% of his fly balls are pop-ups. So 60% are not pop-ups. A third of those 60% are going for home runs, which is crazy. But it's also, like, he hits bombs.
Yeah, so, like, Gordon Beckham, if he just had, like, 70 raw, he probably would have been tolerable.
Right. That's what it is, basically. And a little more walks.
I mean, I think there's more stability in Frazier's approach than Beckham's. I think he definitely knows what he is. I think he's definitely swinging for the fences and
is
solidified in that approach.
Yeah, I mean, the lack of doubles is weird. He's got like 35 home runs and 15 doubles or something like that, and he's not a slow guy.
Not a slow guy and not someone who didn't hit doubles in the past.
Right. He's a guy. Sometimes when a guy like this ages, especially a tall guy, you wonder if he knows his skills are deteriorating, so he's selling out for a certain aspect of his game. And I could totally see that being the case with him. And that's why there's so much power, but also like problems with that power. I mean, you could look at A-Rod's season last year.
Yeah.
Which would not be a good precedent for, Frazier season this year, because considering A-Rod went from 33 home runs and a 250 average last year to a 55 weighted run created plus.
I'm tempted to compare Frazier slightly to Quinton, at least post like injury Quinton, like 09 to 11, just had like a really like leveraged fly ball swing.
Mm-hmm.
And just everything he hit really hard, but he didn't like, you know, dink line drive singles very often.
Right.
And he just had a really bad BABIP, like pretty consistently.
At least Frazier can move.
Yeah. And can slide without like breaking a hip.
Yeah. And like a foot that's doesn't need to be amputated.
Yeah. I mean, there are differences in the comp.
I had no idea Quinton was playing in the Mexican League this year.
Really? He went to the Mexican League after the Twins?
Yeah, he has 21 games and 82 plate appearances. He had 211, 305, 465.
What would Jerry Sands have done in the Mexican League?
I don't know. I don't want to think about that.
I kind of do.
I don't like thinking about Jerry Sands.
Nick does.
Nick thinks about things that he shouldn't think. Like, Nick likes to think about things that make him unhappy.
I don't think he likes to. I think he just can't escape them.
That's fair.
And I think they're all legitimate things to be mad about.
No, they're definitely legitimate things.
I just don't think there's anything. There's nothing to do with them other than to be mad about them. So it's either be mad about them or leave them alone.
Yeah.
they're just awful things that happen.
Yeah, no, Nick gets criticized for being dour about things that are more than worthy being dour about.
It's like, this thing is, like, objectively awful. It's like, we know, stop talking about it.
Yeah.
Which is, like, that's not, a, like, a legitimate response. I don't know.
No, I'm not trying to criticize. That's the tragedy of being a White Sox blogger. It's what's so hard about writing about this team is. It's like, all right, do I want to write, this team's fucked? This team is failed by its ownership, by its general managers, by everything but its, like, six amazing core players. Like, it's all just depressing.
Greg Sparks helped.
Apparently.
Abreu but, has a 15% K rate during this, like, from August on stretch.
I mean, I was listening to the Tigers broadcast that that series against Detroit because it was a series in Detroit, so I wasn't about to listen to Hawk. And they made the Miggy comp because the plate approach, like the way he was hit, that was like, that was during the peak of this amazing stretch he's been on. And they were saying this is why he gets compared to Miggy, and they showed, I think that was the series where he had one of those hits that Hawk compared to Frank Thomas with the inside plate coverage.
That was the Twins. Or at least, like, I clipped were the Twins.
Right, right.
I don't know if he's been screaming Frank.
He had something like
season.
That. Maybe it wasn't even an RBI, but like they were just like, yeah, this is what Miggy does. He finds a pitch that most hitters wouldn't hit. And he puts it somewhere where no one can catch it. And it's completely turned around his season. He's been awesome. Yeah.
I mean, what do we expect had a from... bunch more awesome things he could do. Like, the greatest batting eye, like, of the last 25 years. And a super powerful swing that he could stop on a dive. And all sorts of, like, nutty shit. But... the inside, yeah, like, tucking his hands in, despite being this massive body, was always.
I don't understand why Hawk says that that Miguel Cabrera is the greatest right-handed batter in the AL. And
Frank, he watched Frank.
Like Frank was better. Like Frank, including his decline phase, I believe still has a better weighted run created plus for his career than Miguel Cabrera. Yeah. Like, Frank was 154 and Miguel's 152. And that includes, like, a bunch of years after Frank was, like, completely physically incapacitated.
Frank, like, not a good defender, obviously couldn't move great. At his peak, like, the only flaw he would have at the plate was, like, his hit tool was so freaking good. Like, he didn't hit for as much power as his frame probably would have allowed. Like, he's obviously strong enough to hit, like, 55 home runs, but, like, he could hit anything for a single. So he would sometimes.
You could make the argument that was Abreu's problem for a little bit earlier this year, was that he was making so much contact on these pitches that people shouldn't be making contact on, and it was really weak contact. Like, he doesn't have, and he obviously doesn't have Frank's plate approach, but he has a plate approach where he would be swinging at these pitches way out of the zone and make weak contact with them because he has insane plate coverage.
Oh my God, just looking at Frank's line.
Yeah, same.
He had a sub 10 K rate in his MVP year in 93.
With a 20. Oh no, that was before he was like a 20% walk rate guy.
Yeah, that was the next season.
Yeah. I mean, the next season is the best offensive season from a right-handed hitter. Granted, not a full season, in like the last 50 years.
It's nearly a 500 WOBA.
Yeah, 205 weighted run created plus. He hit 350, 487, 729. He hit 38 home runs in 113 games.
Freaking Miggy. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, like, it's... that season is... like, he had a stretch where he was basically triple crown Miggy. Like, that two-year stretch where Miggy was won two straight MVPs that he deserved. Frank was that hitter from his rookie year until...
through 97, yeah. The first 7 years of his career.
Yeah. And then his body started betraying him. Well, I guess he played a full season in 98. But I'm too young to remember why he went from a 180 waiver run created plus to 126 in two straight years.
He had lower body issues.
I imagine it puts a lot of stress on your lower body to be Frank Thomas.
Yeah, like, what was the game? He was, like, playing some goofy celebrity softball game. He just, like, clocked some massive dinger and, like, just, like, shuffled around the bases looking like he was in agony. But, like, he got to home plate and the interview was like, wow, you crushed that. You feel like you can still play? It's like, when I swing, I feel like I can. When I'm rounding the bases, I know I can't.
Oh, he definitely could out hit. Or, like, in, like, maybe not now, but in, like, 2013 when they were in 2012 when there was Diane was on the team in 2013 was Diane's rookie year, right? He could out hit Diane is what I'm saying. Like,
I definitely thought about while they were putting out like Kotze as a DH.
Oh yeah,
I feel like 2010 was actually Vicieto's like debut. Then 2011 was the whole season of trying to get him up.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Frank never had a season with more than 80 PAs where he was a below-average hitter.
That's real good.
He never had a season with more than 300 plate appearances where he was worse than 125. Yeah, looking at his numbers like is just insane. That fucking 2006 year where he hit 39 bombs and single-handedly willed the Athletics to the playoffs.
It was, like, I know we were supposed to be mad. It was really awesome.
Yeah. I mean, if you're mad at anyone, it probably should have been at Kenny. But no one was going to be mad at Kenny after he got a World Series.
No. It was Grant Frisbee wrote, he can flick you off with a World Series ring on it, so can't really say shit to him.
I still, unfortunately, my most vivid memory of Frank was, Frank didn't have a healthy season that I really remember. Like, I remember 2003 Frank, but I remember 2003 Frank more for being a better pitcher than he was a hitter in backyard baseball 03 than I remember him as a player that hit 42 home runs. Because I was very young then. Like, I knew who he was, and I watched him play. I'm like, wow, that guy's really good. But and then, obviously, that was his last great White Sox season that he actually was healthy for. And then I vividly remember him in 05, though, when he hit 219 with a 590 slugging in 124 plate appearances. He had, in 05, he had 23 hits, and 12 of them were home runs.
Like, when I was a kid, he was already a machine, and he was just, like, something you counted on, and kind of like when I grew up, like, as I understood sports, like, the Bulls had Michael Jordan, the White Sox had, like, Frank Thomas, and then watching the Bears, like, well, where's their, like, God who can do anything? Like,
he was part of Bulls, is really what he was.
But I think the season I most appreciated from Frank was, like, 2000. Because it was, like, a couple of years of, like, things weren't quite right. The press, like, seemed really hostile to him for some reason. That was my first, like, understanding who Mariotti was. It's, like, constant dumping on Frank.
That is completely foreign to me, is why people were ever upset with Frank.
The team, like, they were, like, after 93, 94, like, you expected, like, perennial World Series contenders. And that didn't really happen. And it wasn't really a time where you could, like, understand, you know, the objective value of Frank is, like, fine.
He got the Joey Votto criticism of being too patient, right?
Right. He wasn't someone who just, like, hit as much. Like, he hit a ton of bombs, but he was also, like, in the steroid area. He just didn't hit. He didn't, like, chase records. He just, like, hit 30 to 40 bombs every year.
And then had like a 487, 454, 459, 456, 381 OBP.
Right, but that wasn't quantified back then. Like, you knew, right, like, his average was high, and that was awesome. And you knew he had a great, like, batting eye. He took a ton of walks. But you didn't really understand, like, how rare it was, how little he struck out. And without having those like that objective calculation, the fact that people say like, oh, well, he's slow, oh, he's a DH, you kind of weigh that just like in your mind as like rhetorically rather than like, you know, with a straight objective value perspective. So the fact of that and the Sox weren't winning, you just kind of like look at the best player and wonder like what's up.
So instead of wasn't that like the Jamie Navarro era?
Yeah, the White Sox absolutely could not build a pitching staff after like 93 to save their lives. But his play started to go down at the end of the 90s because he dealt with some injuries. The White Sox tried to like enact a diminished skills clause to like cut his pay, which created like a huge rift.
When did they do that?
I'd have to look it up.
That's really fucked up. They would get eviscerated by current stuff.
Oh, yeah. Twitter, it was something they... I don't know if they ever actually did it.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at the 2000 White Sox player page for their pitchers.
Oh,
this is really bad. Their leading war total for a pitcher was Mike Soroka.
Are you talking about 2000?
Yeah.
That was like a breath of fresh air. They won a division with that staff.
Other than Keith Folkey, or is it Folk?
Folk.
Yeah, this staff is really, like, the names are really bad. I guess there's a little bit of good performance. In 01, it's Burley and Folk, and then nothing. They had two Wells pitchers combined for a lot of runs allowed. What the hell is a Rocky Biddle?
He went off to like have a decent relief career with the Expos.
Oh, Antonio Ozuna, his son's really, or is it nephew? His nephew's very, very good now.
I like Ozuna. He had a really nice changeup.
That's why the
diminished skills clause after he got hurt in 2001.
What?
He finished second for the MVP in 2000. Then he tore his biceps in 2001 and didn't hit any of like his incentives. So they enacted the diminished skills clause to try to defer all of his pay. It like allowed him to like get it become a free agent or something.
Oh, so it was negotiated in the contract.
Yeah, like he had an option to terminate it and become a free agent. But it was something that had loomed over it for a while.
Man, what a disaster.
And he got, like, benched once, and he, like, skipped a pregame training stretching session because he was upset. It was a weird situation. But that was later on than I thought. Okay. But the point I was trying to make... was that after, like, kind of the injury troubles of the late 90s, the season I remember is 2000 of thinking, like, he's back, order's restored. This is, like, what I remember from my childhood of just being, like, this can-do-anything guy.
I'm looking through early 2000s White Sox rotations, and I just remember, like, it's so weird seeing the 2003 rotation have the top three inning pitch guys, 226, 242, 230, with Loaiza, Colon, and Burley. That's so many innings.
Yeah. 2003 Colon probably should not have pitched so many innings.
242, why not?
I don't know, because he probably could have had, like, a lower ERA if he didn't face...
Oh, was he overused?
The fourth... I just remember him wearing down the last starts because, I mean, not even wearing down because part of the whole Colon, but just like, I don't know, the fourth time to the order is kind of a bear in the early 2000s.
Man, the 05 Sox having four guys go over 200 innings is insane.
I remember, like, specifically, I can find it too. Bartolo had, like, some great start against the Giants. Or was having one.
Oh, we talked about this in our past podcast, and he just gets murdered by Barry Bonds.
Yeah, but he struck out Bonds like three times. But then he has to face him a fourth time.
Wasn't it like in the 10th that he had to face him again?
I think it was probably the 9th.
Okay. Yeah, we've kind of like... stop talking about present White Sox baseball, which is probably a good thing.
which is kind of telling about what we were talking about.
Especially because, like, we're talking about White Sox baseball that, other than 05, I really don't remember.
You don't remember the Colon year too much?
I don't remember Bartolo Colon pitching for the Sox until he pitched in that year where 40% of the rotation was Colon and Freddy Garcia.
Yeah, that was not as fun of a year.
It was fun when he disappeared to mourn Michael Jackson.
It's legit.
You know, in light of recent developments with Bartolo Colon's family, I wonder if there's a connection there.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Jesus. I may have cracked a case that no one had looked at for any particular reason.
Yeah, that did, you know, in retrospect, reek of Ozzy giving, like, a really weird fake, seemingly obviously fake story.
Like Chris Sale's jumping off the truck and never actually explaining why he broke his foot.
Yeah, that'll be one for the memoir.
I don't think he broke his foot with a family. Illegitimate family, though.
So Colon took a 4-2 lead into the ninth against the Giants. Gave up a home run to Barry Bonds, a two-run homer to Barry Bonds. And then stayed in! And loaded the bases. And D'Amaso gave up a grand slam that got charged to Colon.
I hated D'Amaso Marte.
I liked him. I don't know. He was good. Why did everyone dislike D'Amaso Marte?
I felt like I was 10 when he left the White Sox.
Yeah, I feel like you don't remember the beginning.
No, I don't remember 1.58 ERA D'Amaso Marte in 2003. I do remember when the Sox were, like, rewarded for trading Carlos Lee for Luis Vizcaíno, who was awful.
He was good in the second half.
Oh.
But not good enough to where they, like, even thought of giving him a meaningful playoff inning. Not that there were many to go around.
Yeah. One of them went to some of them went to El Duque.
that's my
most vivid memory of that entire playoffs.
That is, like, a great moment that, like, as a managerial decision, didn't make sense other than just, like, total, like, Ozzy game, like, I need someone with cojones, and then pointing to the bullpen. And
but Ozzy's bullpen management was the best.
I don't think that decision would have, like, what would the Twitter reaction to El Duque coming into the game
have been? I don't know. I mean, I had no idea. When I was that young, I had no idea what El Duque's story was. So, it was, but, like, I mean, maybe you also just go, like, that dude was that dude in the playoffs before, and, like, he's not, he was bad starting that year, but, like, in the pen, maybe he plays up, and he did. And then did he even, like, pitch in the out of the bullpen for the rest of those playoffs?
Probably not much.
I mean, obviously they didn't need much other than that 16-inning game in the World Series. They needed, Kotz who got the only relief innings in the ALCS?
That sounds right.
Which is still insane. That's definitely one of those things that's never going to be done again, because there's no way any manager would let it happen again. And there's never going to be a rotation like that again with the 05 team, but, like, four straight complete games is so amazing. Like, you don't see that in the regular season.
Yeah, like, that wouldn't be the way to do things. Like, that wouldn't be the advisable way to do things, but that was the identity of that team, and that was the strength of that team, and he leaned on it, and it worked.
That being the strength of the team is probably why that team didn't get to repeat in 2006, because there were so many innings on all four of those guys' arms going into the next year.
Yeah, also the bullpen, like, tanked as well.
Yeah, but so did Burley. Burley had like a near 5 ERA that year.
Yeah, and like 2005 was like basically his career peak.
In 2005, he led the AL in innings pitched in the regular season, and then threw like another 23 innings in the postseason. So he threw. He was coming off. 2004 was 245. 2005 was 255. 256 innings pitched. Yeah. He allowed more hits in 204 innings pitched in 2006 than he did in 236 innings pitched in 2005.
Yeah, Neil Katz threw 2/3 of an inning in game one of the ALCS. That was it.
And then Burley had a save where he, after drinking beer.
A rally beer.
Okay, I think we're kind of done with this.
Probably.
I mean, I love going through the 05 Teams Baseball reference page as much as anyone, but I don't know if it makes for good podcasting.
I don't know. We should probably reference that one 2003 game against the Giants every single time.
It's the second time we've done it.
I can't believe we struck Barry Bonds out 3 times and lost.
Out of Barry Bonds' home run. I wonder how many pitchers ever struck out Barry Bonds 3 times in a game.
Swinging.
Barry Bonds had more than 100 strikeouts in a season once in his career. His rookie year when he was 21.
That's when he was vulnerable. Should have got him then.
Yeah, Bonds' stats are obviously always insane to look at. In 2002, he had 600 plate appearances and struck out 47 times.
He was really good.
From 2002 to 2004, he had 146 strikeouts, which is like less than Jose Abreu has this year.
Poor Bartolo. I mean, not beyond the S, not beyond the confines of that game, but you know what I mean.
Wait. So that was 2004 where he struck him out 3 times in one game?
2003.
2003. Because that whole year he struck out 58 times. And that was a 3-year high for strikeout total for him.
I think Simba thinks this podcast needs to end.
Yeah.
All right. It'll be fun to stitch these two together.
Well, I mean, wait, what do you mean stitch it together? Oh, because I got a call from my mom.
Yes.
Right. You should, like, play music in the break.
Maybe.
And have, like, a quirky interlude.
Maybe some Mao entrance music.
Oh, yeah, I forgot we even had Mao on here in the first place.
Like an hour ago.
Yeah. This went a lot longer than I expected it to.
Same.
I need to go make dinner for my brothers.
Okay. I need to find out where my wife is in the city.
All right. Good luck with that.
Thanks.